You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Fairhead. It looks like Wisconsin will have an extra $4.4 billion to work with in the upcoming budget thanks to unexpected tax revenue projections just out. We'll find out how that happened and what lawmakers want to do with it coming up. Now, the pandemic has upended a lot of things. That includes people's personal finances. Some have saved money after more than a year of staying at home. Many have gotten thousands of dollars in aid from the federal government. Our next guest says that's let many Americans pay down or pay off their credit card debt. Another set of data shows, though, that many Americans with low credit scores are falling behind on car payments. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What has the pandemic and this last year meant for your debt? Have you been able to pay down things like credit cards? Have you fallen behind on things like car payments or other debt? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Anna Maria Andriotis covers consumer credit for the Wall Street Journal. Anna Maria, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Great to be speaking with you.
Let's start with credit card debt. You wrote about this recently. What are we seeing over the course of the pandemic?
Since the pandemic began, credit card debt has been mostly declining, and that has been surprising for the lenders and other industry watchers who expected the opposite to occur. For consumers, it certainly paints a very good picture, at least of one type of consumer debt and how it's being handled by households.
And you looked at the big numbers. You also talked to some people. What is the story behind people being able to and willing to pay down that credit card debt?
So with regards to the big numbers, they certainly tell a very positive story. So credit card balances in total were at $749 billion in the U.S. Back in March, according to data from a major credit reporting firm. And that was down 15% almost from a year prior. This has been the continuation of a declining trend in balances now since at least last summer. And the individual consumer stories are very interesting because they really point to some of the macro events that have been playing out over the past year that have impacted individuals' finances. For example, the impact that deferment and forbearance plans have had has been a big one. So when the pandemic began, the student loan payments, federal student loan payments, were put on pause automatically for millions of borrowers. And what that's meant for some people is the hundreds of dollars, if not more, that they had to send every month to pay down their student debts. Those payments have not been required for more than a year now because of the CARES Act that was passed when the pandemic first began. And so what that's allowed some people to do, including a woman who I spoke with for the story, she basically diverted the $500 a month that she would need to send towards her student loan payments towards her credit card bills instead. And the result, she said, was that she was able to pay off her credit card debt. There have been other types of assistance, too, that have provided big help. For example, the stimulus payments that have been approved by the government since the pandemic began. That's extra money that people weren't expecting to receive and that they've been able to put towards paying down their debt. So it's been a mixture largely of the federal assistance, both from the stimulus payments as well as the deferment and forbearance plans that have put many mortgages as well as many student loans on hold and have allowed people to divert those payments towards paying things down like credit cards. One other program to point out that certainly has had an impact and given some breathing room to people at a time when they needed it. There were also individual lenders, many large credit card issuers were offering deferment programs. Now, those weren't as generous as the federal ones, but it did give people a couple months, in some cases, 3 months or so, to not have to make their credit card payments, to try to get their finances in order, to try to find that next job, but breathing room to keep them from becoming delinquent on their credit card debt.
Now, this, I think most people would see as good news, people paying down credit card debt, not caring as much. It's got some banks and credit card providers worried, though. What are they seeing happening to their business model?
So few credit card lenders expected that credit card debt would be falling for such a long period of time. In the summer, when the evidence of that first emerged last summer, it was surprising, but it was considered to be kind of a blip and things would return to normal. But that has not been the case, and credit card debt has continued to fall. And what that means for the banks is, well, credit cards are a very profitable source of consumer lending for them. The interest charges that people pay when they carry a balance from month to month. Well, when balances are falling, that's less interest charges that the banks have to collect on. And so what's been playing out over the last few months, especially as the employment numbers have been improving, is that the banks have started to loosen some of their lending standards. When the pandemic began, they pulled back sharply, making it very difficult for people to get access to new credit. But it is now becoming easier again to get approved for credit cards. Credit card solicitations are on the rise. Balance transfer offers are also returning to mailboxes. All of this is in an effort to try to increase the number of accounts that are carrying credit card debt from month to month.
We're talking to Anna Maria Andriotis with the Wall Street Journal, looking at her latest reporting on debt during the pandemic. A lot of people paying down credit card debt. Also, some bad news for people we'll get into in just a moment. You can let us know your story at 800-642-1234. Were you able to use, say, the government one-shot payouts to help pay down debt? Or did you find your debt going up one way or another? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. Anna Maria, you mentioned that there are those forbearance programs for things like mortgages or student loans. You wrote about another category that didn't have that and has got some people seeing some trouble. Car payments. What kind of problems are we seeing?
So the auto loan sector is interesting because when we look at the national figures, the all-in numbers for all auto loan borrowers and their ability to pay their car loans throughout the pandemic, the numbers look very good. The delinquency rates really have not risen. But what we looked at was a segment of the population, specifically people who have low credit scores and how they're performing. And what those numbers show, also from a major credit reporting firm, is that the share of subprime borrowers with auto loans or leases who were more than 60 days past due really began to rise starting late fall of last year up through our most recent data at the time of publication, at least up through February. So some 10.9% of subprime borrowers with auto loans or leases were more than 60 days past due in February. And that was up from 8.7% a year prior. It marked the sixth consecutive month-over-month increase and was also the highest level in these delinquency data going back, the monthly data going back to January of 2019. So really the question that we explored here was why are people with low credit scores doing significantly worse than people with good credit scores when it comes to their auto loans? And really what it showed, what we found, was that this seems to be another example of the uneven economic recovery, this sort of deep divergence that is manifesting itself in different corners of the economy between those who've done well or at least have been able to navigate, financially speaking, during the coronavirus downturn, and those who have not been able to do well. So one thing that was interesting here with regards to when this number started increasing for delinquencies among subprime auto borrowers is that as the increase overlapped a period of time during which the government aid with regards to stimulus and even unemployment benefits had largely subsided. So this started during late fall of last year up until right before the next stimulus checks went out this year. It also occurred during a period of time when the deferment programs that auto lenders were offering had were lessening, were starting to expire. So unlike federal student loans and many mortgages that are backed by the federal government, there was no requirement for auto lenders to offer deferment programs to allow people to put their payments on pause without the repercussions of being reported as being late. Many lenders did offer that option, but they offered it in much less generous ways than the federal programs for mortgages and student loans offered, meaning that they were offered for a month to 3 months at most. And if people entered the pandemic having already exhibited some problems paying their auto loans, getting that deferment was certainly not guaranteed. Furthermore, people who have subprime auto loans oftentimes have loans from institutions, from non-bank lenders that have not been as generous in offering deferment as the banks or other auto lenders have been.
Talking to Anna Maria Andriotis, reporter who covers consumer credit for the Wall Street Journal. She's talking to us today about her recent stories on how the pandemic impacted debt in the United States. Many people able to pay down credit card debt. There's a chunk less of it now than there was a little over a year ago. But as you're just hearing, some subprime auto loan borrowers having trouble keeping up with payments. You could join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions for our guest or your own story of debt over the last year or so. Were you one of the many people able to pay down credit card debt? Are you one of the people having trouble making those auto loan payments? Did you use some form of forbearance for a student loan, a mortgage, or other debt? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email us, ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk about how the pandemic has affected people's personal finances, especially when it comes to debt and credit. More people are paying off their credit card debts, but the number of people who have low credit scores who are falling behind on car payments has gone up. Anna Maria Andriotis is with us from the Wall Street Journal, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can email ideas@WPR.org. Let's bring on a caller now. Jeremy is with us from Kenosha. Jeremy, hi.
Hi. I just wanted to say that I was able to pay off all my credit card debt and also an outstanding motorcycle loan, even though I didn't get any stimulus checks, and it was just from the money that I saved commuting and from cooking at home instead of eating out all the time.
Jeremy, thanks a lot for sharing that story. Jeremy, I think not alone, Anna Maria. A lot of people had less stuff to spend money on over this time, and some, like Jeremy, may have put that into debt.
He makes a very good point, and that's actually a big one that I should have said earlier on. The fact that people weren't commuting to work, weren't eating out as much, weren't able to travel, or at least to take the types of trips requiring airfare, hotel stays that are pricey and that were normal before the pandemic, that resulted in, for many households, thousands of dollars in savings, which they were able to put in their bank account or to pay down their debt. So yes, 100%, aside from the help that was offered by the government and by lenders, the sheer fact that people just didn't have as many places to spend their money during much of the past year certainly helped with paying down credit card debt.
Thanks a lot for that call, Jeremy, at 800-642-1234. Getting back to your story on people having trouble keeping up with car debt, people, especially people who have subprime credit scores, it seems like it could be, from some of the people you talk to, Anna Maria, a downward spiral if they lose their car because of debt. Well, that's how they were able to get to, say, a job that they would need to pay down debt.
That's correct. The complications with falling behind on a car can be quite big, as you just mentioned, needing it to go to work. What happens when it gets repossessed and you can't do that? Across the board, what the people who I spoke with for the story had in common is that they came in to the pandemic in a financial sort of status that wasn't the best. They had already missed some payments in their past with their lender. Because they had low credit scores in many cases to begin with, they had loans from lenders that are just not as generous with regards to offering relief, deferment, etc. But also the fact that many of them worked in industries that were among the hardest hit during the past year, in particular in the service industries, whether it was restaurants or bartending, at companies that did immediate layoffs when the pandemic hit. So their finances kind of went through this big shock from the very beginning, if not just before the pandemic officially kicked in the US. And so they were already strapped for cash to begin with, and in many cases had lenders that just really were not willing to work with them, as maybe the larger banks were.
Talking to Anna Maria Andriotis from the Wall Street Journal, talking about debt and how it changed during the pandemic, in many cases for the better, in some for the worse. Back to another caller with a story at 800-642-1234. Russ is with us in Stoughton. Russ, hi.
Hi. I had over $40,000 in credit card debt, and I negotiated a home equity loan with the University of Wisconsin Credit Union, and my rates were way up there. They were 20% and 24%. And I was able to negotiate a loan with the UW Credit Union for 1.49%, way, way down below what I was owing. And that has worked out tremendously. So people need to investigate the possible resources.
Russ, thanks a lot for the call. Is that something we've seen, Anna Maria, for someone with a resource, in this case, obviously some home equity? Have we seen a trend of people tackling their debt in that way, at least to bring down their interest payments?
Well, home equity, home values throughout the country have risen significantly over the past year in many parts of the country. So that is one area that that homeowners have been able to tap into, whether it's with a home equity line of credit or home equity loan or a cash out refi. So yes, that has been one place that they've been able to go to essentially pay off costlier debt, like the credit card debt. A somewhat of a side note, but an important one to point out here is the widespread impact that paying down credit card debt can have on people's finances. Because credit card debt accounts for a big share of our credit scores. And when that credit card debt is paid down, credit scores generally rise. And what that also means is that when the individual goes to look for other forms of credit, be it a home equity loan or anything else, quite frankly, their chances of seeing lower interest rates than what they would have been offered when they were carrying substantial credit card debt certainly is a big deal. It's also worth pointing out at this point, at least, that because lenders are basically looking for more borrowers at this point, we are at such a different place than we were at a year ago when there was such a sharp pullback in the availability of all forms of consumer credit because unemployment had skyrocketed and lenders were concerned. Because in prior downturns, when unemployment spikes, so do delinquencies. This did not happen, at least so far, during the pandemic. And now we're at a point where lenders' appetite for taking on new debt is rising. And what that means, at least in some cases, is the ability to get better deals on loans, lower interest rates potentially than would have been available a year ago. simply because there's more demand among lenders who want to fill in the balances in general that were lost. And that might not just be with regards to, you know, offering credit cards with potentially better terms, but it could also certainly apply to auto loans, personal loans, and home loans as well.
Thanks for the call, Russ. And just our last couple of minutes, Anna Maria, you mentioned our credit scores. It reminded me of another piece you looked at, a plan that might give people access to better credit scores by looking at how they handle their bank accounts instead of just their credit history. Can you sum that up for us?
Sure. So there are around 50 million adults in the U.S. That's 50, 50 million adults in the U.S. who do not have credit scores, who don't have FICO scores. FICO is the most commonly used credit score in the U.S. That has major repercussions on people's finances. Without a credit score, traditionally speaking, lenders have not been willing to offer affordable credit to these people. They've been confined to the world of payday loans and other forms of high-cost credit. At this point, what's happening is that a number of large banks, including JP Morgan Chase, Wells Fargo, US Bank, under the leadership and the input of a federal regulator of banks, the OCC, they're basically working together to try out something new, which would essentially be when people apply for credit cards who don't have credit scores, the banks will be looking to see if they have bank accounts at the banks that are participating in this program. So for example, if you apply for a credit card at JP Morgan Chase, but you don't have a credit score and you don't have a bank account at JP Morgan, as of in most cases, that individual would get rejected for a credit card. But what's being worked on is if you have a bank account at Wells Fargo, JP Morgan could get that bank account data that you have at Wells Fargo to make a decision on whether or not to approve you for that credit card. What are things that they would look at? That would include things like, do you overdraw? Do you take more money out of your account than you have? Well, that would be a negative. But if you don't do that and you maintain a balance within the bank account and you're in the green, essentially, you're not in the red, the chances of you getting a credit card could potentially increase substantially. And from there, you have those knock-on effects that would follow. Suddenly, a person who doesn't have a credit score and can't get affordable credit gets a credit card from a major financial institution. And if that person handles that credit card well, making their payments on time, a good credit score will start to develop. And from there on, their access to relatively affordable loans from banks becomes possible.
Anna Maria, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
That's Anna Maria Andriotis. She covers consumer credit at the Wall Street Journal, sharing some of the big trends in consumer debt during the pandemic. Coming up, we'll find out what state Republicans and Democrats want to do with billions of dollars in new projected tax collections. I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up today at 6 on 1A+, can Congress come to a deal on the president's big infrastructure bill? Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg is urging both sides to come together. He joins Jen White today at 6 on 1A+. Now, a year ago, Wisconsin policymakers were worried that the pandemic would wreck the state's finances and force deep spending cuts. But here we are with more money potentially available than during any budget cycle in recent memory. A report from the legislature's nonpartisan budget office shows that tax revenues are projected to grow by an extra $4.4 billion. As lawmakers work to hammer out a budget for the next couple of years, they're weighing in on what should be done with the money. Republicans who control the legislature say they want to put it toward tax cuts. Governor Evers and fellow Democrats say they want to use it to fund schools, broadband, and other priorities. You could join in at 800-642-1234. What do you want to see the state do with the projected bump in income? Is it time to change the tax code, ultimately cutting taxes, or use it as an investment in K-12 schools, broadband, and more? Some of all of the above? Do you think Republicans and Democrats can find common ground? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. Sean Johnson starts us off, WPR's State Capital Bureau Chief. Welcome back, Sean.
Hey, Rob.
Now, this is a projection. Nobody's showing up at the Capitol with, you know, big bags with dollar signs adding up to $4.4 billion. What goes into a projection like this?
Well, it is definitely like partly a projection, but it's also, in this case, based on some real numbers of tax collections that the state has seen this year. So, you know, the state weighs those actual tax collections that have happened and also looks at, you know, a long-range report on the national economy, you know, put out by a firm that does this for other states, and then uses the best knowledge that they have to say what this means for, you know, Wisconsin's budget situation. When Wisconsin's budget director, Bob Lang, the director of the Legislative Fiscal Bureau, looked back at tax collections for this year in April and May, he said they were unprecedented. And I mean, Bob Lang is somebody who does not speak in hyperbole and has been in the budget office forever. So for him to describe what we're going through right now in those terms gives you some idea of how much revenue the state is taking in and is projected to take in.
What happened? We were worried, of course, about a lot of things last spring, including state revenues. How do we go from dire to, hey, looking pretty good to, wow, unprecedented?
Yeah, I mean, a year ago, there was some thought that there were going to have to be very deep cuts in state government this budget cycle. I mean, the governor did, over a couple periods, order some temporary cuts to state agencies to, you know, they're called lapses, where those agencies had to give a certain amount of money back to the general fund just to keep the general fund solvent. And what happened is that the economy, you know, bounced back. And even in January of this year, there were revenue estimates out from the Fiscal Bureau that were really good. You know, back then, the Fiscal Bureau was saying that by June 30th of this year, which is the end of the current two-year budget, state was going to have a balance of $1.9 billion, which is excellent. And then now in this latest report from the Fiscal Bureau, you're looking at the end of this fiscal year, so the end of this month, $2.6 billion. And that doesn't speak for what you'd have going forward in the next two-year budget. So I just can't overstate how much money is available to the state, given what, you know, lawmakers are typically looking at working with when it comes to a budget.
Okay, Democratic governor, Republican-led legislature. What are we hearing from both of those parties on what they want to do with this surplus?
Yeah, so they fight a lot, Rob. And believe it or not,
wait,
having
really?
more money than ever before.
More problems?
It does lead to more problems. And I mean, I don't know how they're going to resolve things, but they didn't start off on the same page. Governor Evers' administration's basic take, what you hear from Democrats, is with all this money, there's really no excuse to not fund schools. And I mean, the Republican budget thus far, what they passed in the budget committee, gave a $128 million increase in state funds to school at a time when, you know, there's just billions of dollars in the bank, basically. The Republican take is this is not going to happen again, and that this is a time for once-in-a-generation tax, you know, reform is the way that they described it. Senator Dale Coinga, who's on the budget committee, talk about getting rid of entire tax brackets. He's been a big advocate over the years for getting rid of Wisconsin's progressive income tax system to have a flat tax. So obviously, that is not where the governor is looking right now. The governor is saying, fund my budget, basically, pay for my priorities. Republicans are saying, no, this is a chance to do what we want. It's a big, big tax cut.
Sean, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks, Rob.
That's Sean Johnson, WPR State Capitol Bureau Chief. Now for more on how the projected tax revenues might affect current budget negotiations, we've got Arnold Schober with us, professor of government at Lawrence University in Appleton. His areas of expertise include public policy and state and federal government. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What, if anything, should the state do with this projected surplus? Arnold Schober, thanks for joining us again.
It's my pleasure to be here.
Well, we heard unprecedented words like that. Is this a big deal, these new revenue projections?
Yes, they are. And they are here in Wisconsin. I mean, they're looking at close to $5 billion at the end of the biennium, so not this year, but going forward, which is a record high, even when you take into account inflation. So the amount of money that's sloshing around, so to speak, is indeed unprecedented. And I should note, it's not just Wisconsin. And so while Wisconsin's economy has bounced back much better than many people have thought, many other states have too. So the United States, right, as the world, had a huge economic shock, but it wasn't as long-lasting or perhaps even as structural as many people had feared last year or even last fall.
So let's look at the options on the table, as Sean Johnson just laid out. Republicans, first of all, proposing tax cuts. Senate Majority Leader Devin Lemieux says a once-in-a-generation opportunity, as other state legislators have on the Republican side of things. What do you make of the calls for tax cuts from legislative Republicans?
Well, one of the things that will be interesting to watch and perhaps would happen with a different Democratic governor and a different Republican legislature is that they could, in fact, split the difference here. Most of the projected increases come from three big categories, from sales taxes, which is you and I spending money, and then a huge chunk from personal income taxes. And so this projected revenue increase is people making income. And so for the Republicans to say we want a tax cut, well, they're looking at this projection saying, look, this money is coming from income taxes. It's more money than we're expecting, more money than we know what to do with right now. Let's return it. And to finish my third one, the third one is corporate taxes, which is smaller than the other two categories. But so the Republicans can say, look, we're getting this money and we're getting it from people's paycheck. This extra money isn't coming from the feds. There's another line item with all that money coming in. Why not return it to the people who are working here in Wisconsin? Obviously, Tony Evers, the governor, would say, look, this is likewise an opportunity to use those taxes for things that would benefit people in Wisconsin that in a normal year, in a normal budget cycle, we couldn't fund or we couldn't think about funding. And maybe we should think about, to use the Republicans' word, some structural changes to how other programs are run in the state, whether that be state education or the UW system or even how the roads are funded here in the state.
Well, now, I think there's some precedent here, Arnold, flipping the sides around. Republican governor Tommy Thompson, Democratic-led legislature. Democrats wanted some spending increases. The governor wanted some tax cuts. There was a good budget cycle. They did some of both. I mean, is there, apart from my personal animosity and partisanship, is there any reason they couldn't do both?
No, there is none. I mean, with this amount of money, they could easily do both. Maybe the tax cut wouldn't be as big as Republicans wanted, and maybe Governor Evers wouldn't get all of the money, and Democrats in the legislature wouldn't get all the money they wanted for exactly the program they want, but there is no way. One of the interesting things from a political science point of view is that typically when there's a lot of money available, parties are much more willing to compromise. If you look at, to reach back even further than Tommy Thompson, if you look at the 1960s in American politics, the federal government and state budgets were largely flush, and this is a time when lots of new government programs come into effect. Whether for good or ill is a different discussion, but Republicans and Democrats found a way to do it because, you know what? No one's actually hurting that much because there's so much money coming in already. And so today we can look at this and say, yes, we can do this. We can set aside some of that personal animosity that's very clear in our particular case and say we can get some of both. It's possible. Tommy Thompson could do it. Evers could. The Republicans in the legislature could. If they put their mind to it, it would certainly not be out of the realm of possibility. And quite frankly, they wouldn't lose many political points for doing it because they'd both get something that their voters wanted.
Is there a risk, if you make big ongoing changes when you've got this sweet surplus year, whether that's big tax cuts or big annual spending commitments, lean times will come again. Do we end up putting ourselves in positions of structural deficits if we make big changes now?
Wisconsin has a lot of experience with structural deficits, despite looking like it had a balanced budget. That is largely, well, won't speak too soon on that one. That's largely been taken care of, but nevertheless, it is a risk. One of the things to watch this year with many of these estimates is ones that compare year to year over year growth. Last April, right? Last May essentially was zero. And so anything this year, comparing this year to last year, is going to look super delightful because last year's economy was, at least in the early part of the year, was not very good. But because this revenue growth is likely not to last indefinitely, maybe not even to the end of this year, as things come back, as people come back to work, as the economy kind of recovers from all the supply chain jolts that it has suffered, that the growth will taper off. And we may still have a good economy, but it won't be growing. And that does set up the state and the feds, right, for a difficulty if the money kind of contracts or doesn't grow as they expect. Then we'll be looking at kind of rolling back tax cuts, I should say, or cutting funding to programs. And that is, it's difficult for politicians of all stripes to be disciplined that way because they're elected on fairly short terms. I've got a 2-year term, a 4-year term, right? I want to spend the money. I want to do the tax cut now. I don't really care what happens in 5 or 10 years because I'm out of the picture. Some other legislator will have to deal with that. So that is a risk. It's one that they're aware of, but the political calculus really weighs against taking it too seriously.
We're talking about a projected $4.4 billion bump in state tax revenues over the next couple of years. How it could affect the upcoming 2-year budget? Arnold Schober stays with us, professor of government at Lawrence University. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think the state should do with this better-than-expected revenue picture? Cut taxes? Invest more in? Fill in the blank? Little of both? Neither? Rainy Day Fund, 800-642-1234 is the number. That's 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're taking a look at the state's financial picture after a government report this week projected that revenues would be up an estimated $4.4 billion. State Republicans say that should fund tax cuts. Governor Evers and Democrats say they want it to go toward education and other priorities. Arnold Schober is with us, professor of government at Lawrence University in Appleton. You could join in with your thoughts on what, if anything, should be done with that revenue boost. 800-642-1234 is the number to call. Let's bring on a caller now. Chris is with us in Milwaukee. Chris, hi.
Hi. First of all, one big reason there's a surplus is because when you give money to regular people like they did over the last year, regular taxes get paid as opposed to giving money to billionaires who don't pay taxes. So, you know, seriously, let's fix all the problems that real people have, like the schools, the parks, broadband, roads, lead pipes, lead everything, or we could give tax cuts. The richer you are, the bigger your house, the more you should get. I don't know. It's a choice. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Chris, thanks for the call. Chris, first of all, Arnold points to the impact of some of the government relief stuff that came out over the last year during the pandemic. And I know some of the experts are saying, yeah, that's part of why we're seeing this revenue increase here in the state. How big a part of that is this?
Well, it's unquestionable that the stimulus checks, the relief checks that the federal government sent out across the country did give people extra spending money at a time that some of them dearly needed it. Now, critics said it went to everyone, so some people who got it didn't really need it. But regardless, that was a part. One thing I'd point to is that the New York Federal Reserve, so one of the Federal Reserve banks, did a survey of how people were spending them, those checks, and almost three-quarters of the money was being used to spend down debt, so credit cards or being put in savings accounts. So while that was a boost, especially to the sales taxes, right, that wasn't the whole picture here. There's other things going on. The economy is revving up. People are working again. bringing in income above and beyond those stimulus checks. It is certainly true that those stimulus checks helped with this outlook, although, right, those checks are now gone, they're cashed, and so they're not going to have a repeat effect.
And then Chris also brought up kind of who gets taxed, who pays the taxes. And that's a big part of the story in the responses here. Governor Evers' original budget proposal includes rolling back a tax passed in the previous administration on agriculture and manufacturing that helped wealthier people more, I think, is the consensus on that. But we heard from some Republican state lawmakers saying, hey, let's get rid of the progressive tax system, go to more of a flat tax in Wisconsin. So I guess who pays the disproportionate burden of taxes in Wisconsin, Arnold?
That is a political question. Who actually, it's called tax incidence is the fancy term for that, and it's very difficult to tell. Folks on the right will argue things like taxes on corporations. They would say that's double taxation for a variety of reasons. Others would say no, they make money, they use services of the state, those corporations as individuals, as the law sees them, should pay for some of that. So it's hard to say who actually pays the taxes and how many of those taxes are just passed on to consumers, if we're thinking about those kind of corporate taxes. But one of the things to think about is that the sale of all of the taxes we have in this state, the sales tax is the one that is felt most directly by ordinary people because they see it on their receipt. And we also know that sales taxes, kind of lower income Wisconsinites pay more of their income in sales taxes than upper income. So if you want to think about that, sales taxes would be the one that you would cut there. While you might think about kind of tax changes, flat taxes versus progressive, flat taxes are also a little, tend to weigh a little heavier on the lower end of the income scale, although many states around the country use flat taxes. They're very simple to administer, and they aren't subject to the same kind of gaming of tax brackets that progressive systems have, like Wisconsin. Progressive systems, though, have the sense that if you make more money, you should pay more money, more percentage of your income into the system because you can afford it. It's not as important to you. You have enough money for basic necessities and then some, you should add more. So that debate is one that's kind of charged with ideology, and it has been for 50 years, if not longer. And I'm not surprised to see that come up. Flat taxes are simple. People think intuitively it sounds great because the tax code is incredibly complicated. But on the other hand, who pays that is not always as clear, although it seems that upper-income individuals would probably do better under a flat tax than under a progressive scheme.
Thanks for the call, Chris. We'll go to Bill now in Superior. Bill, hi.
Yeah, hi, thanks. Say, this is kind of a wolf in sheep's clothing in the long run because everybody thought that they got all this free money and extra money with this big bump in unemployment. Everybody's going to get taxed for it eventually, and all this extra money is based off of the projections, and a lot of it has to come from income tax. People just don't realize that it's going to end up hurting us. The Republicans are right. We need the tax stuff.
Bill, thanks for the call. What do you think?
Yeah, so one point that Bill brought up there was that the money that the federal government, for example, is sending to the state government of Wisconsin, or President Biden is proposing in some of his bills in D.C., does have to come from somewhere. It's not like the Treasury can just print money and send it out. So it does come from tax revenues from someone. Who, again, is a question? Is it folks with income taxes? Is it transferring money from folks, from upper-income folks who could stand a few more taxes to lower-income folks? Is it decreasing economic output or decreasing hiring, which would hurt folks on the lower end typically because the lower-wage workers are often the first to go? And so he's right in that the money is coming from somewhere. Someone has to pay for this. The Democrats typically have bet that overall more people will benefit from slightly higher taxes because they can shuffle money around to programs that they think will help. Republicans have typically said that if you let businesses have a freer hand with their money, they will generate economic growth to hire those people, so they'll get their money that way instead.
Thanks for that call. And Arnold, we'll leave it there. Thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Arnold Schober is a professor of government at Lawrence University in Appleton. We talked to him about the state's projected $4.4 billion bump in revenues. Earlier, we heard from WPR State Capitol Bureau Chief Sean Johnson. Weekdays from 6 to 9 a.m., it's the morning show. Tomorrow at 7:30, carbon dioxide levels are still going up in spite of some economic slowdowns early in the pandemic. Find out the latest and what it would take to turn the tide on climate change. Tomorrow at 7:30 on the morning show. Coming up next is news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio. Then a doctor tells us America's healthcare system is broken, but the movement to fix it is alive and well. We'll look at where he says it's gone wrong and how we can get a better deal on our healthcare. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network.